The third parak starts out with Mishnah Aleph, which is the final Mishnah discussing the procedure of declaring the day of Rosh Chodesh. So the situation we're dealing with now is that everyone, Ra'u Beis Din V'chol Yisrael, the entire Beis Din, the entire Sanhedrin, and all of Klal Yisrael saw the crescent of the new moon. Everyone knew that this day, after the 29th day, this is talking about the beginning of the 30th day at night, everyone saw that this is the new moon, this should be Rosh Chodesh. In other words, it's going to be a chaser month, not a male month, a shortened month, only 29 days. And obviously, with seeing the new moon at the beginning of the 30th day at night, that's Rosh Chodesh. Or a similar situation, Nechgru Ha'edim, Medim came up, and they testified that they saw the new moon after the 29th day, meaning at the beginning of the 30th day, and they were cross-examined by the Beis Din on during the day on the 30th day, but as a technicality, in either of those situations, Shulohi Spiku Lomar Mikudash, the Beis Din did not have time for whatever reason to declare Mikudash, which is necessary, a necessary component of declaring it Rosh Chodesh, to be the Rosh Chodesh on the 30th day, as opposed to going into the 30th day. So it's going to be 29 days and Rosh Chodesh, instead of 30 days and Rosh Chodesh being on the 31st day, Achachashecha, and it's now nighttime. The whole 30th day passed by, and the Beis Din did not declare that 30th day to be Rosh Chodesh, and now it's night. The 30th day has completed. Harezim Ubar, that automatically becomes a full month, and accordingly, Rosh Chodesh will be on the 31st day. It was not on the 30th day, even though it should have been on the 30th day. In other words, we're learning here that the Beis Din declaring it Mekudash, declaring it a new moon, declaring it Rosh Chodesh, is a me'akev, it prevents it from being Rosh Chodesh. So it's, in other words, it's an absolute requirement that the Beis Din during the day of the 30th declare that Rosh Chodesh to make it into the first day of the new month. Ra'uhu Beis Din Bilvad, if the only people who saw the new moon, again, this is at the 30th, after the 39th day, the beginning of the 30th day at night, it's only the Sanhedrin that saw the new moon. What do you do then? Ya'amdu shnayim v'ayudu b'vneim. Two of the Sanhedrin should get up, act as the Edom, and give testimony in front of the rest of the Sanhedrin. V'yomru mekudesh mekudesh. And then the people on the Beis Din sitting will declare it mekudesh mekudesh. Here again, we're seeing that it's required, an absolute requirement for the Beis Din to declare mekudesh mekudesh. Ra'uhu shlosha v'hen Beis Din. If only three people saw it, and they're the only three members that saw it, and they are on the Beis Din. In other words, we saw had three members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, and only three members of the Sanhedrin HaGadol see the new moon. How do you handle that situation? Yandu Hashnaim, two of the three that saw it should get up and act as the witnesses. V'yoshivu mechavreim, and take another couple of members of the Sanhedrin, Eitzel Hayachid, next to the one who also saw it. In other words, we're going to divide up the group of the three who saw it. Two are going to act as the witnesses. One is going to sit on a new Beis Din and bring another two members of the Sanhedrin to sit with them. V'yayidu bifneim, and the two who are acting as witnesses to give testimony in front of the Beis Din of three. V'yomru, and the three people who are sitting, acting as the Dayanim, as the judges, they declare Mekudesh Mekudesh, they declare it a new moon, She'ein HaYachid Ne'eman Al Yedei Atzma, because the Yachid, an individual, cannot sit as the Beis Din himself. In other words, we can't divide them up and have two give testimony as Edim and one sit on the sun as the Beis Din. We need to join another two members of the Sanhedrin with them to have three on the Beis Din and two giving testimony. Mishnah Beis begins to discuss the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and it will discuss the qualifications or the disqualifications for what is going to be a kosher shofar. So the Mishnah says as follows, kol ha-shofaros, ksherin chutz mishal para, all of the shofars, all of the horns are kosher to be used, except that of a cow, mibnei shehu keren, because it is called a keren, not a shofar. So that is an all-inclusive, all shofars that fit the qualifications. For example, one disqualification is if it doesn't have a hollow inside of it. If it's totally filled in, that would be not kosher. But even assuming that it has a hollow, it's hollow inside, still we are excluding that of a cow. And the next Tana disagrees. Amar Rabbi Yosef, alo kol ha-shofaros nikru keren, aren't all shofars also called Karen? Even the ideal type, which is a ram's horn, is also called a Karen. Shenemar bimshoch bekaren hayovel. He brings a pasuk that teaches us that with the blowing, the blast of the ram's horn, which is also called a keren. So if you're going to disqualify everything called a keren, you also have to disqualify what we would otherwise think is the ideal, a ram's horn. So here we see that Rabbi Yossi is saying that the shofar, the horn of a para, of a cow, indeed can be used. Nonetheless, the Gemara explains that the Tana Kama would respond as follows: that is correct, that all of the shofars are called keren. However, a cow is called only keren, not shofar. In other words, everything else is called a keren and a shofar, and that's acceptable, but a cow is only called a keren and not a shofar, and accordingly, that's why a cow's horn is not acceptable. Mishnah Gimel continues the prior Mishnah, but whereas in the prior Mishnah we discussed what would be kosher for a shofar, whether it's ideal or not, Mishnah Gimel focuses on what would be the ideal type of shofar. So the Mishnah says as follows: Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'el Pashut. This Tana is of the view that the ideal shofar for Rosh Hashanah should be from a Ya'el, which is a wild goat. It should be Pashut, it should be straight. Now, in fact, the Tana is not of the view that it has to be, or even the ideal should be from a wild goat. The ideal is that it be straight, and an example would be the shofar from a wild goat. The concept here, as explained by the Bar Tanura, is that the shofar should represent our thoughts, our tefillah. Just like the shofar is straight, our tefillah is straight and pure on Rosh Hashanah with no curves, just yashar. So too the shofar should be that way. However, we don't paskin that way. We paskin that the shofar, the ideal shofar, should be curved. It should be kafuf. It should be a curved shofar representing that we are both physically kafuf, bending in our tefillah, and also our thoughts should be of submission, of anivus, of humility to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But both would be kosher. The question is, which would be lechatchila, the ideal? And we paskin it should be, for example, a ram's horn, which is kafuf, which is rounded, that it has bends in it and is not straight. The Mishnah now continues talking about the mitzvah of the shofar when it was done in the Beis HaMikdash on Rosh Hashanah. Upiv mitzupa zahav, the mouth of the shofar would be plated with gold. It's not actually where the mouth would be, the person blowing it would be placed, but a little bit above it. Otherwise, you have a chatzitza, a break between the mouth of the person who's blowing and the shofar, so that would not be good. So it was to beautify the shofar, it was plated with gold a little bit above where it would be blown. Ushtei chatzotros min atzadim, and in the Beis HaMikdash, they would also blow with two trumpets on the sides. In other words, the person blowing the shofar would stand in the middle and would have two people on his sides, each one blowing chatzotros, the trumpets. And the way they used to blow is shofar ma'arich, the shofar, when they would all blow together, synchronized, but the chatzotros would stop sooner. So the shofar would go longer, ma'arich, v'chatzotros mikatzotros, and the chatzotros, the trumpets, would stop earlier. Why would they do that? Shemitzvah sayom shofar, the mitzvah of the day is with the shofar. Everyone had to hear the shofar. The shofar would go longer than the blowing of the chatzotros. Mishnah Dalet digresses a little bit and discusses the mitzvah midoraisa of blowing also on a tainus. When we have a time of calamity, plague, whatever it may be, that is discussed in the Mishnah of tainus, that discusses when we have a time of sorrow, that there's a mitzvah to blow also. We blow the shofar and chatzotro. So our Mishnah discusses what type of shofar should be blown on that day as well. Just a side point, but I think an important point also, there is also a related mitzvah midoraisa to daven at a time of sorrow. So the Mishnah says as follows: B'ta'anios, on these fast days, b'shel zecharim kefufim, the shofar that is blown is from zecharim, a male sheep, which is curved. And the concept here, as we mentioned before, is a tainus is a time of sorrow. We need to show our submission, our bowing, both physically and mentally, emotionally, spiritually, that we are bowing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we should have the shofar reflect that, and we use a curved shofar. Opien mitzupa kesef, and on this day we don't have the mouth of the shofar covered with gold, because this is a day of submission. It's not a day of beautification like Rosh Hashanah. So we played it with kesef, which is silver, not with gold. And this is the day fundamentally, the primary mitzvah is to blow the trumpets. That's what we said in the Parshas Baloscho, Shtei Chatzotros. It's Vareosim B'Chatzotros. The trua, the blowing, is the primarily through the Chatzotros. That's the mitzvah yom when we're in a time of sorrow. Shtei Chatzotros B'em. So accordingly, here the two Chatzotros that were blown are in between two people on the outsides who are blowing the shofar. Shofar Mekatzer and the shofar, they all blow synchronized, but the shofar stop early. V'chatzotros ma'arichos. And because the Ikar mitzvah is with the chatzotros, the trumpet, they continue to blow the two trumpets going a little bit longer. Shemitzvah sayom v'chatzotros, because the main mitzvah of the day is not the shofar, the two shofars that are blown, but the chatzotros. Mishnah Hey, we're just going to refer back before we get into Mishnah Hey to Mishnah Gimel, where we said, at least according to the Tan of that Mishnah, that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah is pashut, is straight. And then we went on to say in Mishnah Dalet that the shofar of a tainis is bent, representing our submission on that day. Mishnah Hey continues, Shava Hayovel Rosh Hashanah Letkia V'Labrachos. The shofar, we have a third time that we blow shofar, which is on the Yovel. It's actually blown on the Yom Kippur towards the beginning of the Yovel year, the 50th year of the Shemitah cycle. And it says in our Mishnah that Yovel is the same as Rosh Hashanah for the blowing of the shofar. In other words, just like in Mishnah Gimel, at least according to that Tana, said that on Rosh Hashanah we have a straight shofar, so too, according to the Tana of this Mishnah, on Yovel we have a straight shofar as well, ula brachas, and also just like we have nine brachas in the Shemoneh Esrei of Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, so too on Yovel, on the Yom Kippur Musaf of the Yovel year, we would also have nine brachas. We would also say the Machuyah, Sichronos, and Shofaros. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on one point, Rosh Hashanah, and this is a machlokis that we reference to in Mishnah Gimel. He's of the view, Rosh Hashanah, talking B'shal Zacharim, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, the shofar that we blow is of a male sheep. In other words, it's curved, it's not straight. Ubiyovel, I agree with you, B'shal Ye'elim, that it should be on the Yovel year, it should be a wild goat. In other words, it should be straight and not curved. Mishnah Vav discusses physical defects that may occur to the shofar. So we're actually going to talk about three of them. The first one is if the shofar breaks lengthwise in two, or even not in two, but it cracks along one of the two sides lengthwise. Next, we're going to talk about how about if the shofar breaks in two or many pieces widthwise. In other words, there are a number of ring-like pieces of the shofar, and we want to attach them all together. And the third psul, the third defect, is going to be if there's a hole in the shofar. So the Mishnah says as follows, shofar shenistak. If we have a shofar that's split, literally split in two, but even if one, according to some mefarshim, even one side split all the way from the mouth all the way to the backside of the shofar, vidibko, and you glued it together, or even if you heated it up and attached the two sides to make it look brand new, nonetheless, psul, that is no longer a kosher shofar. It's considered two shofars, not one shofar. Next, what happens if it broke across its width? Dibek shivrei shofaros pasul. Again, if you stuck together different pieces of the shofar that broke widthwise, it is also pasul. It's also invalid. And third part, nikav, if you have a hole in the shofar, stamo, and you filled it in, you sealed it up with the material of the shofar. You didn't use gold or cement or anything, but you took from that shofar or from a different shofar, whatever it is. So now it depends. Ime'akef esatakia pasul. One of the explanations, the primary explanation, is if the sound is different from how it used to sound before it had that hole, then it is pasul. So it's ime'akef. If he's sealing it up, it now sounds different as satakia, doesn't sound like originally, it is pasul. V'im lav, if the sound is the same as it sounded before this hole was filled up, in other words, if it sounds the same before when the shofar was whole, and now that we have filled up the hole, it sounds the same, in that situation, it's going to be kosher, it's going to be a kosher valid shofar. Mishnah Zayin discusses a situation where we have a kosher shofar, even the ideal shofar. It has no physical defects. The kolos came out beautifully, but there are situations that somebody may not fulfill the mitzvah of hearing the shofar as follows. Hatokeo letoch hadbor, somebody who blew into a pit. It's talking about either that the person was in the pit or just the shofar was pointed down into the pit. This was something that indeed happened in early Jewish history when there were decrees against Klal Yisrael fulfilling mitzvah, so they had to hide themselves when doing mitzvah, so they would get into a pit and blow there in the hopes that the non-Jews who were making these decrees against their fulfilling mitzvahs would not hear it. O letoch hadus, or into a cistern. This is similar to a pit, but it has its walls that were cemented or enclosed by stone. Either way, o letoch hapitam, or if somebody is blowing the shofar into the barrel, im kol shofar shamayatza, the person standing on the outside of one of these, outside the bor, outside the dus, outside the pitam, if you're standing outside, if you did hear a pure call, if you did hear the blow of the shofar, you are yotze vim kol havara shama lo yatza, but if you only heard an echo, then you are not yotze the mitzvah. So the person who is inside with the shofar and hears it, he would hear the actual blow. The whole suffix that we have, the whole question is somebody standing on the outside, and then we have to run an analysis. Did he, and he has to make this analysis, did he actually hear the kol, the actual blow, or an echo being not satisfactory? And now the Mishnah is going to continue another example or other examples of people who heard valid blowing of the shofar, but still, despite that, did not fulfill the mitzvah. V'chein mishaya over achorei beis haknesses. Somebody was passing by the shul at the time that they're blowing tkiyah shofar. Or shaya beis osamach beis haknesses. Or he lived next door and suddenly he hears the shofar blast. Here the Mishnah continues. V'shama kol shofar. He hears either the shofar or kol megillah, or Megillah Sester is being read. It's Purim. He's walking by in back of the shul, right for the beginning of the Megillah, and he stands there in back of the shul, or he lives next door, and he says, why should I bother going to shul? I'll just listen from here. The Mishnah says, im kiven libo yatza, if he pays attention. In other words, if he intends to fulfill the mitzvah, he has kavana to be yotze the mitzvah, he is yotze the mitzvah, v'im lav lo yatza. But if he did not have the proper kavana that I'm going to be yotze the mitzvah of shofar or megillah, he is not yotze the mitzvah. We see, at least based on this, the opinion that mitzvah trichos kavana, you have to have in mind to fulfill the mitzvah. Afal pish zeh shama v'zeh shama, we can have a situation where two people are in the same situation, but even though one heard, they both heard, afal pish zeh shama v'zeh shama, A heard and B also heard, and it looks like they're doing the same act. However, one can be yotze and one cannot be yotze. Zeh kiven libo v'zeh lo kiven libo. One had kavana to be yotze the mitzvah, and one did not. Accordingly, only the one who had kavana will be yotze. The one who did not have kavana will not be yotze the mitzvah. Mishnah Ches is a follow-up to the prior Mishnah. We saw that intent, kavana, is a critical function to be yotze the mitzvah. When somebody is hearing the shofar, we need two people to have the kavana, the person who's blowing the tokeh and also the person who is hearing it, the shomea. They both have to have in mind that they're going to be yotze. The tokeh has to have in mind that he's going to be yotze himself and motzi others, and the person who's hearing has to have in mind he's fulfilling the mitzvah. So now, in Mishnah Ches, we're going to bring two historical events that bring out this concept, how kavana, intent, thinking about a mitzvah, thinking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, is a critical component of how we live. So the first one goes as follows. When Amalek attacked Klal Yisrael, when they came out of Mitzrayim, so the Pasuk in the Torah in Shmos, Yudzayin, says as follows, Vaya kasher yari Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael v'chule, that when Moshe Rabbeinu, when he lifted up his hands towards heaven, then Klal Yisrael were being successful in the war. But when he put his hands down, then Amalek was strengthened and they were successful in the war. So the Mishnah asks as follows, v'chiyadav shal Moshe, osos milchama, shovros milchama, is it really the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu that would make or break the war? What's the impact of the hands? Elo lomar lecha, but rather this is to teach us that the hands are just symbolism. Kozman shahayu Yisrael mistaklin kaplei mala, whenever Klal Yisrael was looking heavenward, as symbolized by Moshe Rabbeinu reminding them with his hands up, look towards heaven, look towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's where our Savior is going to come from. Umeshabdim eslibam la'avim shepeshabayim, and when they would subjugate according writing their hearts themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They would daven and supplicate themselves. Hayu misgabrin, that is when they were successful in the war. Vim lavin, if they would not do that, Hayu noflin, that is when they would fail in the war. And the second historical event, Kiyotzei Badavar HaTomer, a similar concept we see when Klal Yisrael at the end of the 40 years in the desert, they were complaining about the man. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends serpents, snakes, to attack them and bite them. And there was a plague in Klal Yisrael. So Klal Yisrael says to Moshe Rabbeinu, they complain, they ask, Moshe Rabbeinu, please save us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save us. So Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Asei lecha saraf, make for yourself a fiery serpent, a statue of a fiery serpent, v'sim oso al nes, and put it on a pole so everyone can look up to it. V'ya kol hanashuch v'ra oso v'chay. And anyone who is bit, they will look at it and they will live. And now the Mishnah asks a similar question. V'chi nachash meimis o nachash mechaye. Does a snake have the ability, just looking at this snake on the staff, on this pole, does it have the ability to kill people? Or does it have the ability to resurrect, to heal people? Ela bizman shi Yisrael mistaklim klapei mala. But the same thing is, when they would look up at this pole, and then they would look at the serpent as representing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our savior. So the time that Klal Yisrael would look up towards heaven, umeshabdim es liban la'aviyam shebashamayim, and they would subjugate their hearts, and they would daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hayu misrapim, then they had a refuah shalema, they were healed, v'imlav, and if they would not do that, hayu nimukim, they would wither away. And now we're going to get back to a halachic discussion, also based on the prior Mishnah, where we saw that to be yotzei a mitzvah, somebody has to be mechaven, the person doing the mitzvah has to have in mind to be motzi somebody, and the person who is being yotzeid also has to have in mind that he's yotzei via the other person. That typically works, but not all the time. So the Mishnah says as follows, a chayrish, when it comes to blowing the shofar, same with the Megillah, a deaf person is not yotzei because it's a din of shmiah. You have to hear the tkiyas, you have to hear the Megillah. So if we have a chayrish, a deaf person, typically chayrish means somebody who's a deaf and a mute person, but here we're talking, even if he's just deaf, simply can't hear but can speak, that person cannot do the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar and Megillah for another person, because the chayrish is not chayav, because he can't hear either the blowing of the shofar or the Megillah or a shota. Somebody who is insane, he does the bizarre things, he's a deranged individual, he's also not chayav in mitzvahs because of that. If a katan, somebody, it was a boy who was below the age of bar mitzvah, it says, ein motzin es harabim yedei chovason, they can't be motzi other people the mitzvahs, whatever mitzvahs it is, and here we're talking specifically about tkiyas shofar, they cannot do it for other people who are obligated in the mitzvah. For example, somebody above the age of bar mitzvah cannot be yotzei via any of these three, a deaf person, an insane person, or a katan. And this is the general rules, this is the principle called she'ina mechuya bedavar, anyone who's not obligated to do a mitzvah, and these are three categories that they're not obligated to do a mitzvah, eino motzi asarabi medei chavasun, cannot fulfill the mitzvah for other people, the public, or any individual who is obligated. Now, typically, we have a concept, if somebody is doing a mitzvah, somebody who's obligated to do a mitzvah, they can do it for other people as well. But even more so, even a person who is obligated for a mitzvah who did it already, he can also do that mitzvah for other people. For example, somebody already heard shofar, he can blow it for other people who have not heard the shofar yet, because of the concept of kol Yisrael ha-ravin zeh la-zeh, each Jew is responsible for another. So we can be motzi other people because we are required to do the mitzvah, even if we've already done the mitzvah. That is called yatza motzi, somebody who did it already. Now those are talking about many mitzvahs. It's not talking about an exception to the rule with saying a bracha, birkas aneni, saying a bracha on an apple. If I'm not going to eat the apple, I can't say the bracha for somebody else. It has to be the specific person who's having the hana'ah that has to say the bracha. But when it comes to birkas and mitzvahs that we're talking about, when it has to do with doing the mitzvah, like the Megillah and shofar, even somebody who already was yotzei can be motzi another person because of, we have this klal kol she'eino mechuya bedavar, eino motzi asarav yedei chavadon. If you're not obligated, you can't be motzi other people. But if you are obligated, even if you've done it already, yatza motzi, because of kol Yisrael ha-ravim zeh la-zeh, because each Jew is responsible for another, we can be motzi another Jew and mitzvah, even if we have done it already.